There it is, broadcast video live. Okay, it's Lookout Landing Podcast. I believe this is episode 7. It's episode 2 of the video thing. The first time we did the video thing, it was just me and my bunch of my friends, and we never did anything with it. But here we are with Lookout Landing staffers, Logan Davis, Nathan Bishop, Patrick, complicated last name that he always spells backwards. So, Dubuque. Okay, all right. Dubuque. I got it.
That's what it is. You kid.
It's a city in Iowa.
60 I always thought it was Dubuque.
Dubuque? Well, it's better than DeBlock, I guess.
So we're here to talk about some Mariners baseball and introduce everyone to the wonderful staff that we have put together and compiled. We have many topics that we're going to hit on. Do we need to do introductions? This is in the outline. We have an outline here. Should we be doing introductions?
I'm Logan.
You're like twice my age, dude. Pass for me.
Who is the oldest? Am I the oldest?
Yes.
I turned 35 yesterday, so.
Oh, you're like twice my age.
Happy birthday.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Happy birthday.
Yeah, I celebrated by having a kid scream. So, it was fun.
Yeah, I am a month from 30. Nathan, you are 32, right?
Yeah, and that's those are the only ages we're going to discuss on the roundtable.
Yeah. Nobody needs to know how old Logan is. Logan is 35.
So where are we all broadcasting from exactly?
I am broadcasting from beautiful Bothell, Washington.
Ooh.
Suburbs.
I'm in Port Orchard, right across the Sound, a ferry right away, but a world away culturally.
I'm interrupting Nathan. I'm broadcasting from Hawaiki, which is a suburb to the east of Honolulu, Hawaii. And there's a storm outside, which hopefully you can't hear.
Nope.
And yeah, I'm up in Edmonds, corner of Edmonds. Nobody wants. Technically, it's claimed by Edmonds, but it's like next to Aurora, so it's owned by the gun stores, I think.
I'm going to pretend like I know where any of these places are.
Seattle,
Logan,
bro.
Logan, why are you a Mariners fan?
Okay, so the story of my baseball fandom. All right, my parents were both baseball fans growing up, because they both grew up on the mainland. My dad in Pennsylvania and my mom in California. And after they moved out here, they wanted to sort of keep in touch with it, but it's difficult being in Hawaii. Because MLB blackout rules basically mean you can never, ever watch a baseball game. And when I was, like, 5, I could finally fly without getting an ear infection. We did a West Coast run up for some baseball games. And the first professional baseball game that I can remember seeing was the San Francisco Giants and the Texas Rangers. And that was a game where some crappy backup catcher named Armando Rios hit a walk-off home run against a Rangers reliever. And for like a week, I was Armando Rios. Like, I was destined to be a Giants fan. But then, 1 week later, we went up to a Mariners game, which was going to be the last game on the trip. And Alex Rodriguez comes up to the plate, and his walk-up song is Who Let the Dogs Out? And I thought that was like the coolest song. That was my jam. Like, there was...
That's- impressed me on so many levels.
On the list of my favorite songs, there was the Star Wars closing credits, and then there was the Land Before Time songs, and then there was the Dogs Out.
Did they count as one, or do all of them tie for that second place?
All of them.
Okay.
How many Land Before Time movies are there, anyways? 8?
More.
Yeah, more?
I don't know how I know that.
Well,
I know we had them all on VHS, and I used to drive my parents insane. It was probably not a good idea for them to buy those. But yeah, I became a Mariners fan because of Who Let the Dogs Out. And then the year after that was 2001, and so they were the only team that I saw on the West Coast that had like a really good year, and that was that.
Good Lord.
Wow, I'm thinking the experiences here are going to be a little bit different with our... with the rest of the crowd of how they became a Mariners fan, right?
No one's going to top that.
Here's how I became a Mariners fan. I was born in the area, and I happened to like baseball. I mean, that's
is there a definitive? But I mean, is there like a moment where I mean, did you just grow up loving baseball, or is there a definitive moment where, from your early childhood, this stands out, where you specifically remember being really enamored by the game?
Yeah, you know, I think for me, the one thing that I always point to is Greg Brierley. I mean, Greg Brierley was my guy. I had glasses when I was a kid. There was a guy in baseball that played with glasses on. How cool is that, right? So every time I saw Greg Brierley up to plate, I knew that, you know, if he could do it, I could do it. If a guy with, you know, 20/240 vision or whatever the hell I had when I was a legally blind child could play baseball at the professional level, then I would do it. But my parents not really into sports very much. It just kind of happened naturally, and with baseball cards and all
wait,
that
wait,
stuff.
Wait, wait, wait. How come Pete O'Brien was around the same time, right? How did you not become a Pete O'Brien fan?
Because
why Greg Brierley?
Because it
because
has
Pete O'Brien was terrible, unlike Greg Brierley.
Greg Brierley was terrible.
That's the thing. I had
hey, look, Pete O'Brien and Greg Brierley are both way cooler like guys to be fans of than Alex Rodriguez. Right.
It's true. And Greg yeah, Brierley was cool. Also terrible at baseball. I was terrible at baseball. And that's the common thread right there. This is what happened to me when I was in my childhood, not particularly good at sports. When I was about 11, I played basketball, and the coach gave out basketball cards and said, hey, this is the player you're most like, and everyone on the team got, like, Michael Jordan or Hakeem Olajuwon, and I got Mitch Richmond, and there were 10 people on the team. So that's about how good I was. So that's why I like Greg Brierley.
Awesome. Wow, and what time was when would that have been, like, what, late 80s?
Yeah, that's probably 88, 89, and probably I was five, well, I guess I was 6 or 7 years old at that point. I was born in 83, so, yeah.
Okay. Mine is not nearly as hipster, nor is it as terrible as Logan's. I just went to a game. I mean, I grew up playing baseball and loved it, and went to the Old Kingdom in 89. I've been trying to find the date here, but it was a game. Oh, there it is. I just found it. So on May 21st, 1989, 19-year-old Ken Griffey Jr. hit an inside-the-park home run against the Yankees and almost lapped poor Alan Davis, who started on first. And I remember my dad telling me that Ken Griffey Jr. was 19, and I thought, wow, that's really old, because I was 9. But
hey, what is this?
One day you'll be able to drink in Canada, Logan. Someday.
Shut up.
Someday. so anyway, yeah, that was kind of the moment where I fell in love with Major League Baseball, if not necessarily baseball, and obviously, unfortunately, the Mariners at that point. I've been doomed to that mantle ever since. So thanks, Griffey. Jerk.
19 is really old.
Well, as for me, my parents don't care about sports in any way. They don't care about baseball. They don't care about any of it. The reason why I don't know why I started watching baseball. I think one of the major reasons is that back when I was a kid, here Logan, there's an old joke. Basically, we had a cable box that every time you turn on the TV, it started up at 3. No matter what you left it on, you turn it back on, it was 3 again.
Yeah, we had that too.
ESPN, fortunately, was channel 3 at that point, so I watched a lot of sports just because I was too lazy to change the channel when I was sick. And so I watched a lot of baseball, but it wasn't, you know, ESPN in the 80s, they couldn't afford real baseball, so they had, like, like college baseball. Sorry, college baseball is real, technically, maybe. But so I watched a lot of baseball on TV, and I would play a lot of wiffle ball in my backyard, but it didn't really have anything to do with the Mariners until I started collecting baseball cards. And my mom loves to collect things, so we would buy, when I was a kid, she would buy these trading cards at the grocery store, and they'd be like Gremlins cards, either those cards based on the movies, because that's what kids did back before video games, was they collected cardboard strips of movies that they were too young to see. And so I'd have all these cards of the Gremlins and like Empire Strikes Back and all that stuff. And so finally there was just one year where there were no movies out. And
did
so,
Caps collect any Rad Dudes cards?
I didn't have Rad Dudes cards. I had plenty of Garbage Pail Kids, though, from my childhood. Actually stuck in photo albums, like they're actual like treasures of my childhood. But I started collecting baseball cards, and so I realized the Mariners from Seattle, and so I had all these 1985 Fleers, and so
I had
all
these
rookie cards of Alvin Mark Langston, and my favorite at that point, Jim Presley. I don't know why Jim Presley. It didn't last long, but yeah, Jim Presley was it for a while.
Did you ever play baseball growing up? Outside of your football?
I played Little League until I was about 10, and that's why I picked my favorite baseball player as Ricky Henderson. Not because he was good. I mean, he was, but I didn't know that at the time. I knew he was short, and he was fast, and I was short, and I wasn't strong, so I assumed I was fast, and so and it worked out. I mean, it turns out I picked one of the, you know, like the 20 best players of all time. I didn't know that. I just thought, hey, he's short. Cool.
I remember you writing about that.
And he played for a rival for most of his career, so I kind of had that little awkwardness going on as well.
2000, don't ever forget.
Down to 2000, I was thrilled.
That was awesome. Well, that was moving.
That was incredibly moving, yes.
I feel inspired to talk about the Mariners some more.
What's the next topic we got here? Oh,
trade deadline?
No, favorite piece of baseball memorabilia. Oh, this is good.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say that for the end, but, you know, we have this ending.
Dude, there's a outline.
There's
an outline that Patrick totally made and then was like, hey, guys, check this out. And then I rewrote it, and I was like, Patrick made this.
You rewrote it?
No.
Overstepping your bounds, bud.
Seriously,
things have been moved around. That's cool. We don't need to deal with the logistics right now.
So, to Patrick or Logan type, feel free to modify or add because this is important.
No, that was all right. Technically, I did type. Feel free to modify or add.
So okay.
Culpability is out. That's me.
Gotcha.
Wait, are we gonna talk about my Ken Griffey Jr. photo ball or not? What's happening right now?
No, we decided to say screw that.
No,
I'm just kidding. No, I want to know about it.
Okay, here it is.
Yay!
Oh, I got the wristbands.
Wow.
Ken Griffey Jr. photo ball right here.
Same picture. But, yeah.
1987 draft. I drew a little box around it when I was six because that's what people do, apparently. Got the old M's logo on it right there. This thing is very special.
Did you get it at a game?
I don't know where I got it. Probably for Christmas or something like that. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh, I have other good stuff too. Don't you worry.
I have somewhere.
Stuff.
Go ahead, Patrick.
Let's see. Hold on. The only thing I've got within arm's reach. I have a 2002 baseball prospectus handbook. That's not really it, but that's all I've got on me right now.
You guys, Logan, tell them about memorabilia really quick. I'll be right back.
I have the 2002 baseball prospectus media handbook. This isn't it, but just pretend like it is.
Tango's book. There you go.
Oh, that Tango's book.
Okay, there we go.
Oh, okay, all right.
Go buy it. It's like $12.
See, we're also talking about how I liked players with glasses. I obviously really liked Chris Sabo.
Yes.
As you can see here with my Chris Sabo shirt. So I also have my prize Chris Sabo starting lineup figurine right here.
I like stealing the base. That's cool.
Yeah,
that's
Chris Sabo not remembered for being a stolen base threat. No. He stole like 46 his rookie year.
Jeez, spuds, man.
His back gave out. Again.
I have all sorts of good stuff in here. I just keep it. I never threw away this stuff. Chris Sabo triple play baseball right thing.
Nice.
That's a collection.
I have this Mariners helmet with some autographs on it. You might be able to see from up close. I don't even remember. I think my dad bought this in a white heat of these are going to all be worth like $5 million someday and we'll pay for college, which they didn't.
Because they were Mariners prospects.
Yeah, but it's got the whole 93 team on here, actually, which has some really fun ones. But yeah, I don't know where the other stuff is. There's some, though.
Okay, well, my baseball memorabilia, somewhat limited, but up here I have this kind of funny story. A Lookout Landing lurker who also lives in Hawaii found out that I was graduating from high school and showed up at my graduation, like the bit after graduation where you all mill around, and gave me this.
What?
This is a Casper Wells signed baseball.
What?
This was after Casper Wells was DFA'd, of course. But this is my Lookout Landing memorabilia. So,
meh.
Lurkers haven't given any of you free stuff.
That's really cool, but it's also super weird, let's be honest.
Yeah, seriously. Is there like a picture of you married to whoever gave you that on the other side of that ball?
No, no. There was a note, though. It was a little less creepy because he had a cousin who was graduating at the same time as me. So he at least had a legitimate reason to show up to the graduation besides this guy who writes a blog that I read is graduating from high school.
At least he's efficient.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like a totally reasonable thing to me.
I don't even know how he found that out. That was before I told anyone online that I was, like, still 18. He probably, yeah, like, how did he know?
Every time there's now any sort of involvement where your age comes out, there's going to be a whole group of people that missed the previous few times it was announced, and they'll be like, what?
Yeah, I know.
In the masthead on your photograph, you just say, I am, and then age for each of us, except for me, because I don't ever need to know when I'm 35.
Just put it as your signature, Logan.
Yeah, there you go.
I had signatures on the kill landing.
Well,
my first baseball memory is Carl Everett. You can put that in your signature.
The only other piece of Mariners memorabilia that I have, which I will show because it's a poster, walk over, is...
Whoa, got mobile.
It's the Ichiro He Is the One poster.
Sweet.
From 2001.
That's solid.
Still up on my wall. That's really geeky. But yeah,
I just realized how poorly this is going to translate as a podcast right now.
Yeah. Are we just supporting audio?
It is supporting audio, but here we are. We're showing stuff to the camera.
You guys,
look at this poster. Look at this.
You want to see
card.
My helmet again?
Yeah.
Look, you guys.
We're prop comics right now.
Let's talk about trade deadlines.
Yeah, let's talk about the trade deadline.
Okay, on topic.
Really, I was going to, like, wave my long, flowing locks.
Do you have a rat tail back there?
No, I don't.
I have some more stuff I can show if anyone wants to see. What else is in my drawer? Here's a card of Ellis Burks, 91 Leaf.
Oh, that's awesome.
I have an unopened pack of 91 Fleer Ultra if anyone
wants
to. Open
it right
now. Yeah, you should open it right now.
All
right,
hold on.
I bet you get a Ryan Sandberg. I don't know. If you do, that's going to be awesome.
I'm opening it. I've got three of these unopened. Oh, here we go. Second card. Griffey.
Oh, man.
Shouldn't have opened that.
That wasn't Ryan Sandberg.
Come on.
Ruined the value.
We got a Kevin Mitchell right there.
As a Mariner?
No.
Nope, as a Giant. We got Tommy Gregg. Daryl Boston. Wow. Mike Marshall. Benito Santiago.
Yes.
Billy Hackert.
Hey, oh. A name that I recognize.
Let's talk about your quintessential early 90s players. How about Kevin Elster?
let's all have conversations in which Logan cannot participate.
Yeah,
Come on.
We're on it, man.
Responsibility.
You need to
Kevin
know,
Elster
yeah.
was in a movie. Which one was he in?
Let's talk about beer.
Oh, Kevin Elster was in...
Was he in Rookie of the Year or was he...
Or was he in Little Big League? Oh,
Little Big League. I think it was Little Big League.
I think he was in Little Big League.
He retired and then came back and hit like 20 home runs the year after he came back. I don't know what happened. Then he turned back into a pumpkin, but he had one great year. Kevin Elster was celebrated for 1 year.
Yes, he was in Little Big League. I'm embarrassed that I didn't know he was in Little Big League right off the bat because I'm really into that movie. So.
Ooh, 1996 for Texas, 24 Yakkers.
Yeah, there you go.
780 OPS, which was good for a 90 OPS plus in that era.
Wait, isn't 780 OPS what we hope for from Dustin Ackley?
I would take 700.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Jason Bay had a 691 OPS and a 98 OPS plus in 2013. How the times have changed.
Steroids are a hell of a drug.
Okay, so let's talk about the trade deadline, speaking of our dearly departed Jason Bay. It is in, 36-ish hours now? And the Mariners have not done anything. To me, it doesn't appear like they're going to do much of anything. Perhaps Brendan Ryan, perhaps Oliver Perez. Other than that, I don't see a lot of deals. What do you guys think? What do you think they should do?
Well, how about we take this sort of player by player, I guess. I don't Brendan Ryan. I don't know if they should trade Brendan Ryan. I mean, I wouldn't. You're not going to get anything for Brendan Ryan because he's bad. And so, like, you might land cash, and then the opportunity to give Carlos Triunfo 100 plate appearances. Like, who cares? He's Carlos Triunfo. Might as well keep him around. Hope that Miller can learn something. Maybe. I mean, in for a penny, in for a pound on the whole veteranosity thing.
Go ahead, Scott. Sorry.
Oh no, I'm just kind of in agreement. I don't really see the point at this point. He's a guy. I mean, consider who the Mariners traded to get him, which is what, Macleo Clito, and he's done virtually nothing, and that was for 3 years of Brendan Ryan's control. And you're gonna get 2 months of his control, and what you got for 3 years of him was a C-level relief prospect.
Yeah.
it's not a lot. I don't know if it's worth it. Just trading to trade at that point, I think.
I think the only scenario would be, and I don't think there's any reason to really think this would be a factor, is if there's some sort of Shopik factor going on there.
Where
I have no reason to believe that he would do this, but where he would cause a problem in the clubhouse for not playing more, where you just decide that sort of negative energy isn't worth keeping around. But otherwise, I mean, Brad Miller could do something horrible tomorrow to himself, and we would need a shortstop. And if we need a shortstop, we might as well put the best defensive player in baseball, arguably, out there.
Yeah. Hey, but keep in mind, if we package Brendan Ryan and Michael Morris and Oliver Perez, we could get, like, Dylan Bundy.
Dylan
Bundy.
Come on.
We'll never pitch again.
I'm not doing that deal.
You got to at least throw in Gausman. I'm not even considering it if they don't give Gausman.
That's correct.
What about Machado? Come on.
I mean, we'll toss in smoke if we can get Chris Davis. I mean,
hey, Rangers first baseman.
Hey, we could have had Chris Davis. Let's talk about that some more.
No.
Oh my God. No.
You remember who the Mariners drafted right before they drafted right before the Marlins took Giancarlo Stanton? I think it was like Denny Almonte.
That worked out well for us.
That was a fun sentence.
No. So we've kind of covered Ibañez. I mean, we've kind of covered Ibañez a lot. What do we think about Ibañez?
Whatever.
Again, I mean, what's the point?
What are we going to trade that? I mean, just like we could skip all these players. What are we going to trade that's going to get anything back that we actually want to trade? That's
Perez could get something.
Perez could get something. And you're not getting something, you're getting the chance at something, but that's fine. It's Oliver Perez. It's a relief pitcher. He'll be terrible next year because all relief pitchers are terrible every other year. Yeah. Something was good.
Brandon Lee was like absolute garbage. And he landed, what, Leon Landry and Logan Bauckham? You know, they're not good prospects, but they're prospects. Like, they might eventually be something.
They're dying.
Unlike Brandon Lee.
Oh, he's something.
He's $25 million worth of something or whatever the Dodgers
that's
gave
Dodger
him.
That's Dodger money. Doesn't matter. Doesn't count.
Yeah, that's Monopoly money. That doesn't count.
Yeah, so is there... So other than Perez, I mean, would you build, I don't know, Morales? Like, there's no reason to want Morales and Perez, but I just try to think of scenarios where I want us to trade somebody.
I see an argument for trading Joe Saunders. I mean, I don't think that the Mariners are very inclined to run out Nwesi or Bevin in the five spot the rest of the year and just, you know, basically punt every fifth game. But I guess it just depends on how much they really care about the rest of the season. There's this argument that I think of that they're trying to increase their win-loss records for future free agents and for the rest of the team and to show success of the franchise, and, you know, Zarensic's job is maybe on the line. There's a lot of factors at play here, but I think the team could get something for Joe Saunders. Not much, but something.
What was it? He landed like a reliever last year. That might be worthwhile, just some relief prospect from another team.
Yeah, the bullpen's garbage, so we can't just, you know, cast that aside.
Yeah. And it wouldn't have to be Bevin or Nwesi coming up. I mean, Paxton has been fairly interesting in AAA lately.
Yeah, I don't really think some of the young guys are going to be on an innings limit, though. And, I mean, how many innings do they really have left? I mean, if Paxton comes up, how many? He gets, like, what, four or five starts, and then
he throws like 30 pitches an inning, so only lasts like 4 innings a start. His inning count should be fine.
But our junior.
as long as he's on a pitch limit.
Yeah, I know we've got some split opinions on James Paxton here. I'm not a fan. He's going to be a reliever, and that's it, deal sealed. But like, if I were placing money on it, I would say that he's probably going to end up as a reliever pretty quickly if he can't iron out the control consistently.
There are worse things. The whole thing there then is just whatever you could get for him in a trade. Would that be better than having a potential quality left-handed reliever, I guess?
At this point, I'd rather parlay the success that Paxton is having as a starter and just say, hey, look, he's a good starter again. He's still a top prospect, and use him to go get somebody else in a trade, because I think his value right now as a trade chip is probably more than I see for him as a future in the Mariners rotation. But, you know, that's me. I'm not a scout or anything. So
if Walker ends up being a starter who's average, league average or best, and Paxton's a decent reliever, and Holson literally never pitches again, that's still going to be probably a better than, 50% outcome for the big three as far as them all being pitcher prospects?
Yeah, that's probably better than 50%. If Walker is good and the other two, like, Holson dives in a car crash.
Didn't he?
Paxton is a reliever. That's terrible.
We could have just said that Holson tears his rotator cuff, but if you want to talk about car crashes,
in baseball terms, that's basically what that is.
Yeah.
He tears his rotator cuff in a car crash.
I'm still just bitter about going to watch him pitch and then having Noesi's spot start one after I showed up to the stadium.
That's the worst.
Yeah, as far as if we're going to get back to Saunders, I really think that there's something to having every game be at least watchable.
I agree.
We've seen Anthony Vasquez. We've seen Ryan Fairbairn. At some point, that C-grade reliever prospect is not the same as having to watch you instantly lose, you know, every fifth day the rest of the season.
I am a Bevin defender. I think that there is value to Blake Bevin, and the value is that he is a replacement-level starter, and that stops you from having to throw Noesi or Vasquez or whoever else out there. I mean, like, replacement level is surprisingly tricky to find. So it's nice that we have this one really crappy guy so that we don't have to play all of our other even crappier guys.
And that guy should not be one of your top five starters.
No, but
he should be the sixth guy. He should be the long man that you pull out when somebody tweaks a muscle, because somebody always will.
Yeah.
You don't want him already in the rotation, because then you have somebody, you know, strain something, and suddenly it's Noesi time.
And yeah, isn't there also something, I mean, Logan's right, probably, because he usually is. But so his thinking from a front office perspective is definitely right on. But as a fan perspective, from my perspective, there's nothing aesthetically appealing about Blake Bevin. Nothing.
Well, there's nothing aesthetically appealing about Joe Saunders. I mean, they're both...
Yeah, but I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. I'm not arguing your logic. I'm just saying, like, I would so much rather watch Joe Saunders pitch than Blake Bevin. I don't know why. I'm just telling you how I feel.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Well, I don't have to watch them pitch. I just get the game.
Yeah, you can't watch baseball.
Nope. Blackout policy.
I can't believe you're blacked out.
I'm not blacked out of Mariners games.
I'm blacked out of
Mariners, Padres, Giants, Athletics, Angels, Dodgers, and none of them are carried on local TV. Which begs the question, is murder always a crime?
No, actually.
I'm gonna assume that you have found a way to watch Mariners baseball.
No comment.
Number four.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the next thing on our outline here is, are we comfortable with the organization? That seems like a big topic.
Yeah, that's a loaded question right there.
Before we get to that, can we talk about Morales and Iwakuma if we're going to do trade deadlines?
Yes. Sorry.
And then maybe the buying potential. I guess those are three things that we could discuss.
Everyone just slow the fuck down, all right?
I'm not allowed to swear.
Why not? You can swear.
Scott!
It's got the parental advisory on the podcast.
Fuck balls, man.
It says explicit next to every episode of the podcast.
I've sworn on every podcast I've ever been on, so yeah, whatever.
Oh, a podcast expert here. You've been on a lot of podcasts.
Four.
Wow, that's a lot of podcasts.
I was trying to keep it on the DL for all the audio people, man. Thank you.
But By the way, I just want to point this out before we get to anything else. Have you guys seen what Ryan Roland Smith is doing in Pawtucket?
Holy crap. He's been good.
He's been very, very good.
I've not seen that.
ERA and all that stuff, but he's got a 1.03 ERA. He struck out 36 batters in 43 innings. He is pitching out of the bullpen, mostly in kind of long relief and stuff. His whip is 0.87 and, you know, strikeout to walk ratio 3.45. He's got an opt-out clause in sometime in August, but there's been a lot of talk that he could make it back up to the Red Sox.
Okay. What the hell happened with the Red Sox? Like, so it's 2011. They're expected to win everything. They collapse horribly down the stretch, and then people are like, oh, well, next year. And then in 2012, they're terrible, and everyone gets fired. And then they have an offseason where they go out and they give big money to Mike Napoli and Shane Victorino, and Fangraphs is like, these are bad moves. Maybe Ben Sherrington is a bad GM. And then suddenly 2013 rolls around, and the Red Sox are crushing everybody, and they have the best farm system in baseball, and they have all these fair relievers. Like, when did this happen?
That's reverse regression.
It's all Bobby Valentine's fault?
All the manager. Everything on the manager.
So much impact they have, those managers.
Especially in 2011. It was Fire Eric Valentin in 2011.
I still love him. I still love Bobby Valentine.
I still love Ryan Roland Smith. I can't get over that. You guys just made my night. That is so awesome.
Yeah, isn't it great? And he hasn't even been like he hasn't even been a shred of anything close to good in years.
Wow. Maybe he finally pinned Joey Glazer, and now he has renewed confidence.
Yeah, he was kind of good until he tried to
Jay Glazer.
Cliff Lee. And yeah. Then once that happened, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm not Cliff Lee. I'm just going to be horrible for 4 years.
And super nice all at the same time.
Okay, Logan wants to talk about Kendrys Morales and Iwakuma, so let's do it. Kendrys Morales.
No, don't trade him.
No, don't trade him.
I'm flying effort. Extend.
Yeah.
It's pretty basic. Someone's got to give an offer better than the qualifying offer, you know, the value of qualifying offer, and I can't see it happening. Market's limited. More value to the Mariners than anybody else.
I can't imagine that the prospect that you would get back for 2 months of Morales would be better than the guy that you could get with the first round draft pick if Morales leaves at the end of the year.
Especially when you consider what the front office has done with some of those late first round draft picks. Nick Franklin and Taiwan Walker and Brad Miller in the second round. I mean, they know how to draft down there, so that's valuable.
Okay. And Iwakuma?
Nope.
For the right package,
I would do.
The price, yeah, of course, the staple answer, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, if they can, I mean, seriously, if they could leverage, does a contender desperately need a starter right now? Because I don't trust him to be anywhere near as good as he's been this year so far for the rest of his contract.
Iwakuma is the next Michael Saunders. Like, you know, the projection systems won't like him as much next year, and we'll go, oh, but he improved, and then we'll be wrong, and he'll hurt his shoulder or something, and then be terrible again. Yeah, I should have traded him.
Yeah, but even if he's not as good as he is now, he's still better than his contract. He's worth what we're paying him, and we're not gonna. It's what we can replace him with. And if we go back to Bevin, I don't want to go back to Bevin.
Well, that's why he. I mean, but for the reasons that you just stated, he might actually have like real value, where you could get. I don't know what you would get. So
here's my thing with Iwakuma. I think at this point, his value dictates that he should bring back established major league talent in return, but you're not going to get that for him at the trade deadline because no team is going to take a step backwards while they take a step forwards in getting Iwakuma. So it's just going to be prospects, and I have my doubts that anybody is going to shell out enough to make it valuable because I also think the Mariners think that they're past this eternal stage of rebuilding, you know, and they think that okay, we can contend in 2014, 2015, and he's a piece for those years. I would be very surprised if they even came close to trading.
I don't think they will, but it's an interesting thought experiment.
I don't think so either. I think that maybe if they were going to trade him, it would probably be in the offseason. We have a better chance of getting something of value back for Major League Ready, that is.
The last one, buying.
Don't do it, man.
I'm not adverse to buying. It depends on the I mean, I'm adverse to buying rentals, but if there's someone that's available through 2015, 2016. I mean, I'm okay with it. Like, I think we talked a little bit about what would it be like to get Carlos Quinton from the Padres. That's something that, you know,
that'd be interesting.
That's of interest to me. But, you know, you talk about getting Jake Peavy or something like that. Like, we talked about, I don't know.
I'm not interested in buying with the thought of its primary appeal being to contend in 2013.
Yes.
Wait, yeah. I think even, like, the thing about the arguments for buying now is that, oh, we should buy now so that we'll get better in 2014, like with the PD contract. But realistically, right now there's a pretty extreme seller's market on, and even though the free agent market this winter is terrible, you have to assume that the trade market is going to be a little bit less expensive during the offseason than at the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. I feel like you'd be paying less to get these guys if you do it in the offseason. And so if we're not going to use them in 2013, then why don't we just wait?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, that's one of the points I made in my PV article is I think it would just be immensely, like, if this team wants to push all their chips in and go for it in 2014, that's okay. Go ahead and do it. That'd be fun. I'm looking forward to 2014 if they decide they want to do that, but I don't understand why they should do it now when it's going to cost them so much more and they've got so many teams bidding against them, especially contenders. Like, you're going to give up more than a team like the A's will to get Jake Peavy? I don't think it's a good idea.
I agree.
Well, Jake Peavy, they're not trading him now, according to the White Sox. They're building a team around Peavy.
Yeah, come on, really? That smells like a leak job if I've ever heard one right there.
Their only veteran left, besides Adam Dunn.
They should trade.
Isn't Gordon Beckham's
a veteran now? Yeah,
at this point,
yeah. They are at this point.
Alex Rios.
Is Dustin Ackley Gordon Beckham? Because that's kind of scary.
No,
Jeremy.
I don't know if Dustin Ackley's going to be good enough to be Gordon Beckham.
Oh God! All right, let's not.
I'm
talk
so.
About
this Dustin is Ackley too depressing, anymore. Man. I don't want to talk about Dustin Ackley anymore. I have his jersey. He has to be better than this.
I have his jersey too. It's my only Mariners shirt.
All right, what's next?
Confidence in the organization.
Ah. Patrick, your thoughts.
Yeah, am I? You know, a month ago I would have said no before Franklin and Miller, and I wasn't optimistic about Franklin. Now, you're right. There's enough to go ahead and take the shot at 2014. We'll give it one more year. We'll see what happens. I think I'm willing at this point to pay for one more year of a potential 2009 happening next year. That's your risk. Is that? That's how I kind of thought this year would be. It was like the year the philosophy fell apart. It's shown enough. I'm willing to put myself at risk of dealing with next summer, if need be.
Yeah, I have this struggle where it's almost like, okay, it's all the success and it's his guys and, okay, maybe we haven't given him enough credit for guys like Franklin and Miller, and maybe Walker is amazing too. But the thing is for me is that those guys, they're there. Like, if we get somebody else, those guys are still there. And there's part of me that says, thank you for all you've done and gotten us this second wave of great young prospects, but I'd like to bring in somebody that's better at trading, that's better at free agency, that can really take this team to the next level going forward, that maybe isn't as talented in the, you know, the youth and the farm aspect as you've been. Don't you think there's a little bit of a temptation for that? No, just keeping everything he's done and just making a break and going with someone else?
Well, my thing is, you know, if we're talking about these guys' strength is the farm system and is drafting, right? And so the defense in their favor is that they've been really good at drafting. They should keep them around because they've been good at drafting and should be evaluated based on these prospects who have come up and been pretty good. But the thing is, like, the next draft, the players in the next draft that they would get to do would not reach the major leagues until 2016 at the earliest.
Yeah.
And based on the last year of the Mariners' major league transactions, like, I don't have any confidence in this front office's ability to add pieces that would help the team in 2014 and 2015 by trade and free agency because they're bad at that. And I don't have any confidence in their ability to do that by the draft because you can't. I mean, those guys have to spend time in the farm systems. So if you really want to gun it for 2014 and 2015, I mean, you don't want to be looking at Kyle Blanks or Michael Morse or
yeah.
So what we're looking for is a Gillick. We're looking for a Pat Gillick who can take the talent that was already there and make his three nifty trades.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot to that question. I mean, first of all, the question is, who's hiring his replacement? What, do we have any trust that he can actually identify somebody that will do better? There's the question, and there's no way we can know this. There's the reading the tea leaves of where is free agency headed in Major League Baseball in the next year or three, and how important will that ability to sign free agents be? And there's a question of ownership and how they see the team succeeding. Are they wanting to go small market here where we're going to rely almost entirely on young talent? Because if so, having a GM where we can draft regularly and get a regular pipeline of quality young players is really important. But why are you motioning at me, Logan?
Sorry, hand signals. Don't do that. No small market.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't want them to do that. I don't want them to do that at all. Maybe small market's too strong of a term, but more just having one or two big contracts and hoping that they can supplement with the young guys. Because there is something to the fact that Durensic in some ways has been exactly what he was billed to be when he got here, which is he is a farm system aficionado, first class, and we're starting to see the results of that now. And Scott and we're all Mariner fans for going, we have not been able to build up quality position player prospects in, what, since A-Rod? At least ones that we haven't traded right away.
Since Logan's fandom.
Yeah.
Since the dogs birth. Were let out.
Since Logan's birth. Maybe it's me.
I don't know. I think there's a real case for keeping them unless there's a specific plan in place. Let's get rid of him and hope to find somebody better. If they have somebody they've identified that they think is the guy that's going to lead to success in 2014, I could get behind it. But it's been way the hell worse, and I'm really not looking for more terrible, please. So, I don't know. That's probably more risk-averse than I should be, but I forget what it's like to contend. I'm so happy being not terrible now that I would just like to keep being not that.
The other thing is, I think, you know, in general, except for what the Red Sox did last season, which was kind of unprecedented, I think usually when teams fire their general manager or their front office, you know, they punt the offseason, basically, because they spend the first 2 months of the offseason trying to hire a new staff before the new staff can come in and analyze stuff. And while they're doing that, you know, everyone else is signing all the free agents. So, and if you want to contend in 2014 and 2015, you know, there's this conflict that's like, okay, well, I don't want this front office picking the guys, but also if we fire them, then there's going to be nobody picking the guys for at least this offseason.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Although the free agency is the market slowed down in recent years, so I think it's less of a detriment than it might have been in the past. You've got more free agents bleeding into to March than previously seen. So look at what Cleveland did with Swisher and Bourne.
Yeah.
Still, I think it's definitely true, Logan. I think it may be not quite disastrous now, just a major disadvantage.
I know you're not speaking in total absolutes, Logan, so I'm not going to like say that your words were too strong or anything, because every argument's a little bit more nuanced. But Zrenzik's not bad at trades. He has been bad at trades. He has made good ones as well. They just haven't necessarily happened recently. I don't know. What's that?
He's been unlucky, too. I mean, Gutierrez, that was a good trade. It wasn't his fault, the Gutierrez.
No, it was a really good trade.
I don't know how fair it is for us to rip him for Figgins, because I was totally fine with that deal. He just decided to suck epic ass.
Yeah, that's I always have put the blame on Figgins more than I've ever put the blame on Durantic. So.
Well, whoa. The thing is, like, people, especially on Look at Landing, the thing that bugs me is that people, like, call the front office Zarenchik, and he's not. Like, there's a whole staff around him that is helping him to make these decisions, and it's basically turned over completely since he made those good trades that everyone talks about and likes. Right. And recently, you know, if we're accrediting the recent moves to this newer staff, you know, they've been bad. Yeah, I can't, or bad based on our analytical processes. The last five or six Mariner transactions in a row, I've seen the news break on Twitter, and my initial reaction has been, what the shit are they thinking? And,
You know, that would it would be nice not to have that happen anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why I kind of suggest this forward-thinking argument instead of backwards-thinking. I mean, I'm kind of with Patrick though, where if they decide that they're going to give him one more year, because I mean, honestly, if the team continues to progress in the second half, and let's say they finish somewhere between 78 and 82 wins, which I think is a moderately decent projection based on what they're going to do the rest of the year, I think he's going to get another year. So, I mean, what are we going to do? He's going to get another offseason, and I don't know. I think he's going to stay. That's all I'm saying.
Wedge 2, right?
Yeah, probably Wedge 2.
I agree.
Wow. Yeah, it's interesting. Wedge, I just looked this up today. Wedge is already fourth all-time among Mariners managers in games managed.
Jeez.
He's only got like 100 to go to be second behind Pinella.
Wow.
Crazy?
That's crazy.
Who is their first manager? Is he second or third?
Johnson, Daryl Johnson, I think he's second or third. It's Pinella, Johnson, and I want to say that...
Jim LaFever?
I can't remember who the third one is. Pardon?
Jim LaFever?
No, LaFever was around for 3 years. Well, maybe he is LaFever. LaFever was around for 3 years. This is going to be his third year. So, yeah, I think LaFever's just ahead of him. Mm. But, yeah. What? 2.5 years and you're fourth all time.
Auspicious history.
One of the things that I hear a lot about the process of evaluating Jack Zarenczyk is, you know, if he wins this many games, he should get to stay. And if he doesn't, then we should fire him. But I think there are two other ways that you could make that decision that actually make more sense to me. One of which is, if he wins above a certain threshold, we should fire him and get a new guy in. Because that would say that the young talent is already working, and we need someone who's better at bringing in major league talent and maybe less good at the draft. And the other thing is, you should sort of evaluate him by the success level of the prospects that he's bringing in. So Ackley Smoke Montero would be a giant X against his name, whereas Miller, Franklin, and maybe Zunino would be pluses so far. But those both make more sense to me than if we win a certain number of games, we should keep this guy.
Yeah, I agree. I like that first point you made a lot, yeah. Actually.
I totally agree, but that's where the narrative is going. I think that for myself, at least, I've just kind of surrendered myself that that's the way that it seems like it's playing out, whether or not that's fair. I don't
yeah,
know the organization's thinking on it.
It's messy to make a change, and this is the way that things are done, and that's the way it's going to be. If he finishes 500 or above this year, it's a lock. Him and Wedge are coming back. I think it's a done deal. It's
going to happen. I don't think we can pair Wedge and Zarenczyk. I think this ownership has always been really quick to fire managers and very slow to fire general managers. The Vasey, I mean, Vasey lasted how many years? Four? Five? Longer than almost any manager. It's crazy. And we can see how inept he was. So
this is the same... is this Zarenczyk's fifth year, too?
Yeah.
This is the same time as Bavesi. He's had the same time as Bavesi, yeah.
Well, he hasn't been as bad for the organization. But, yeah. I mean, it is ironic that we're saying that if he finishes above 500, you know, he gets to stay. Whereas, if I were in charge of it, if we finished above 500, that's when he gets fired, and we bring in a new guy.
Good news is we're not finishing above 500, so...
No, we sure as hell are not. This road trip is going to suck.
Yeah, this road trip is not going to be fun, guys.
It's going to be terrible. Yeah, not looking forward to it.
Let's see, who's up on the schedule?
I know, I was just looking at the schedule right now. Okay, Nathan. Nathan's got tomorrow. All right.
Jason Bay.
I forgot. No.
No.
I actually feel for Jason Bay a lot, and a lot of that comes from just an interview that he did when he was signed, and just the tone in his voice, you could just tell the guy was just beat up and broken down from all the New York pressure, and he didn't know what the hell happened to him in New York. He just said, I lost it and I couldn't get it back, and I just felt so bad for the guy. And it's like he knew that this was it. Like, Seattle's the team that's going to give me a shot, or I'm going to take a minor league deal. and now here he is, and he's gone, and it's a bummer. It's not like I am shedding any tears that the Mariners got rid of him because it was the right thing to do, but I'm just saying, from a human standpoint, I feel bad for Jason Bay.
From a human standpoint, though, I think he can probably leave relatively with his head high. I don't think he's necessarily because he was awful, although he obviously wasn't great. It's more of a roster squeeze than anything else. We had, and like a byproduct of the Mariners having a million corner outfielder, first baseman, DH players, you know.
Yeah.
There was that was the biggest thing when they signed Bay in the first place, is none of us ever figured out how he fit on the roster.
And they cut Casper Wells, which I don't like. That's the off-season move that the Sabre community has forgotten about. We all rail on Morris Jasso like, that was so stupid. But you know, we were just as mad about Casper Wells, and look what happened there.
Yeah, that's a stupid one.
But our bullpen is still terrible. And we could use Casper there right now.
let me veer off course for a second, because I feel like right now, like right when Jason Bay got released, I saw a bunch of stuff on Twitter of people who said, look at what Mike Karp is doing. And it's like, okay, hold up. It was never Karp or Bay. It was Karp or Ibanez. Yeah. They chose Ibanez. I mean, do you guys really, even with what Karp has done this year, and that Boston has really utilized him very well, they've platooned him, and they've used him in pinch hitting and in ideal situations and stuff like that. But, I mean, can you really fault the Mariners for cutting ties with Mike Karp? Because I don't really fault them. I think he got a lot of chances and just couldn't quite follow through on it here.
Well, he was terrible last year.
They say he was hurt, but how long can you give a guy, really? That's a marginal player.
He had that, I mean, I see some sort of parallels there with Mike Karp and Mike Saunders. I mean, they both had the shoulder injury at the beginning of the year, and it sapped their power. And both of them had games offensively that were built all around power. And both of them, you know, when their power went around, they were crappy. And the difference was that Michael Saunders kept getting run out there because the Mariners had no one else in the outfield who wasn't Andy Chavez, whereas Mike Karp got basically replaced by Justin Smoke. And I think before the season, you know, I think I liked Karp better than I liked Smoke. Which I don't know how accurate of I don't know how I feel about that in retrospect, because Karp's been doing really well in a part-time role, and Smoke's been doing pretty well for himself in a full-time role.
I think one of the things that's interesting about Karp is that the Mariners seem to have lots of players who are great fits for good teams. Karp, Ibanez, these are players. Ibanez would be really useful as a pinch hitter backup for an excellent team who needed some power off the bench for a clutch situation. We've got these guys, but we don't have the team that makes them valuable. And so we get rid of them, and then we find out how useful they are.
Or we run them into the ground by playing them every day because we have no one to put in front of them.
Right.
Kelly Shopik disintegrates, and Jason Bay disintegrates, and Raul Ibanez disintegrates.
And their weakness is getting closed. And
Raul is currently disintegrating.
Yeah,
he is. He's done. Yeah.
I said Raul Ibanez was done back in April. Let's not be too hasty about these
things. Get back on that boat, son.
Yeah. He's done. I'll be the one to fall on the sword this time. He's done. He's done unless he can get back down to like 2 to 3 days a week, maybe.
Yeah,
he's exhausted. He has to be. Which, I'm still just sad about Michael Saunders. So did Scott leave?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Cool.
You need...
No worries. So that was my thoughts on Bay. I think he can keep his head up fairly high. The next thing on here, if you guys are okay moving past that, is I think it's really interesting, the offensive struggles of late and how real and how random that is. Unless you guys wanted to talk about Jason Bay more.
No, I'm done with Jason Bay.
I left to get water, I missed it.
Oh, he's awesome. You were wrong.
Okay, sounds good.
So we're going to talk about the offensive downturn the last, week or so?
Nine games since the All-Star break.
Yeah.
Well, no, Raul Ibanez hit the wall, and Mike Zunino got his hand hit by a ball, and now we're playing Blanco instead. And, you know, Nick Franklin and Brad Miller have not been setting the world on fire like they were before, so.
I don't know about Nick Franklin. He's been pretty damn good.
Yeah. It's interesting that this time it seems like we've got half the team not hitting, but it's the good half of the team not hitting. The team you don't want, you don't care as much that they're not hitting. I don't. If Raul Ibanez goes 0 for the next 80, that's fine as far as 2014. Who cares? Yeah. Nick Franklin, Brad Miller, they're not throwing up on themselves, and that's great. That's what I want to see.
Nick Franklin's. I like doing this. I know it's stupid, but ever since I, learned of this existence, I love putting players on the 162 game pace because it's like, what if, Nick Franklin, 162 game pace is for 31 homers, 59 walks, and a 137 OPS plus. I mean, that is, and 37 doubles. Superstar. And he's 22.
He's not going to. Yeah, yes, please, but not actually going to. I mean, I saw this tweet from, I don't know, ESPN or something, that had a Nick Franklin strike zone heat map on it, and it was supposed to be complimentary. It's like, oh, look how good this guy is doing with inside pitches, but I saw Nick Franklin's lefty heat map, and it's exactly the same as Dustin Ackley's lefty heat map. Like, the middle and the inside are, like, solid red, and the outside is solid blue. And I was like, oh, shit, not again. this is going to go poorly.
Maybe Franklin actually learned something, though. Let's give him credit. He might actually try and adjust a little bit.
Yeah. Ackley just seems like he's stubborn to me.
I was going to go with a different word that started with STU.
Not fair.
Just wants the strike zone to be called just like the rule book, for shit's sake. I'm so tired of the left-handed strike zone. It drives me absolutely insane.
Robot umpires now.
Handle it.
Umpires.
God. That's right.
Robots.
Robots.
You know, if you actually did that, I bet you would seriously screw up some of the game's top OBP guys. Like, I bet the current top OBP guys have figured out this is a borderline strike that always gets called, and this is a rulebook strike that never gets called, and they adjust based on that. If you actually did the rulebook strike zone, they would suck, and there would be a new group of prospects that would come up and be the new OBP guys. Like, John Jaso would get effed.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's some sort of hype factor to that, too, that players that are smaller tend to get strikes not called because they look smaller, that they have some sort of bias for the umpires. But there's probably some study that Logan could do. Get right on that, Logan. Measure all the OPA.
Just by the end of the broadcast is fine.
Okay.
Anytime. We need something on the schedule tomorrow, so if you can go ahead and get that up, that sounds good to me.
That'd be great. So, to my eye, and this is just like super, just watching way too much baseball and don't actually know anything about the game, but from Ackley and Franklin's heat map, I would speculate that Franklin would be more inclined to be able to adjust to that outside strike, because not only does he not start with his hips open and stays closed pretty well in his swing, he is right on the plate from the left-handed side. So I don't think he's going to run into the problem as much of not, because Ackley cannot hit that pitch that gets called for strike three on him that's like 2 or 3 inches outside. He can't reach it.
He's got two doubles on it.
Not on that the breaks. Pitch. Not on that pitch.
Look at the I'll call him GIFs. I have to call him GIFs. Fuck, I can't call him GIFs. There's already peanut butter that's GIFs. It's GIFs. I don't care.
This is the Michael Saunders thing from spring training 2012 where he hit doubles to the opposite field. Yeah. You're like, hey, it might be something. And then he sucked for a month, and then he was great. And then he sucked again, but I'm going to forget that part.
I think you're the last person on Earth that still really cares about Michael Saunders, honestly.
I like Michael Saunders.
I actually, Logan. I love Michael Saunders. I root for him every damn day.
Well, I mean, I actually think he might still be good. With guys who have shoulder injuries, I'm willing to give them more time than I think most people do, because I think they're the guys that come back a year later and suddenly reappear. And I'm hoping that's the case with Ackley. I think at this point, and I don't know, this is kind of starting to be a parenthood thing for me, but when you have a kid and the kid is crying, you're trying to put the kid to sleep, and
I'm going to leave the room now because I have no experience here.
You can go through the steps. There's like 7 steps you got to go through, and then finally you get to the last step, and it's time to put the kid down. You put him to bed, and then they start crying. You're like, okay, start over. I think with Ackley, We went through this test. We sent him down. We got him his confidence back. Everything was good. We brought him back to the majors, and then he hurt himself, and he started crying. And you just got to start all over again. Put him back down in the minors. Start from step one. Just pretend those 2 months didn't happen. Just start over.
If he just cannot get that AAA pacifier taken out of his mouth, or he is cry.
The problem is, I don't think AAA does anything for Dustin Ackley, because it seems to me, you look at the peripherals, he's more patient in AAA than he is here, and I don't think they've got that same strike zone. I think that he gets that outside strike call in AAA, and he doesn't get it in the bigs. So I'm not sure that he actually learned anything when he awesome went down there.
That would be awesome data to know if we could get that. That would be really interesting.
Minor league pitch FX data. I wonder.
No, not wondering. No. you can't trick me into doing this.
Well, do it.
You've got like 3 hours on us, Logan. It's only what, like 7 o'clock there? Go for it.
I love it. This whole conversation is just Logan being intrigued to fill in the gaps of our ignorance in a later post.
It's Logan's you're not even doing anything, Logan. You're on vacation. You should have to do everything.
A job.
You know, your job is Lookout Landing, and we pay you so much money to do it.
No, I have another job that makes me money sometimes. Yeah, wait, what was this con? Like, at the beginning, they're like, oh, yeah, you'll get to write featured posts sometimes or sponsored posts sometimes, and they'll pay you for it. And it's like, no, they won't.
Wait. You get paid for the featured posts?
This is public record.
We're keeping this funny.
I don't want to have to edit anything out of the podcast here. Let's
give me money.
Give you money. Yeah.
I'll give you a rec.
Welcome to writing on the internet.
Yeah.
We all know what we signed up for.
I didn't. I'm 18.
You're 18, yeah.
I'm going to cry.
Don't worry, you got 10 years left.
Yeah, you before die. I'm old like you.
It just all gets worse, Logan. Just everything just gets worse. So, good luck.
Okay. Well, you're right. I do have an irrational man crush on Michael Saunders. I have an irrational man crush on all outfielders who can post like a 110 WRC plus with good speed and defense playing in corner. I don't know what it is, but like Michael Brantley, Will Venable, Michael Saunders, I like all of them.
I agree.
I
love players who have so much value that isn't tied to their bat, personally. And when Saunders is going well, he's a good base runner and a plus defender at a corner spot. So he's just that guy where it's like this imaginary hurdle. You know, you see these great stars who have these great hitting lines, and then you think you have this toolsy guy. It's like, you know, he doesn't even have to hit that great. All he has to do is, you know, just like, you know,
right,
like league average. But then he doesn't just hit league average. He like Dustin Ackley's all over everything. And it's like, well, there's literally no value there. So it's
I'm
with you, Logan.
Like, he doesn't even have to be good at hitting. And he could be, because he's got great tools, but he doesn't have to be.
Michael Saunders is just the player version of the 2010 Mariners. All you have to do is hit just a little bit.
If Michael Saunders could just be, like, David DeJesus in 2010.
Oh, I'm gonna bring him up.
I mean, is that not the quintessential guy?
I have a rational hatred of David DeJesus. I think for some fantasy baseball team, I had him on my roster for a whole year. I don't even know why. He doesn't do anything.
Oh,
hey, no talking
careful
about fantasy baseball.
Can't talk about fantasy baseball. Let's spend the next 10 minutes talking about Otto New, all right?
Are you still sore about that?
It's been
3 months, man.
Oh my gosh. You guys were such fucking assholes when I first signed up. The community was just so ridiculous to me.
As opposed to now, where we love all of you.
We've cooled off. Yeah.
Yeah, all you commenters, you guys are great. I love you all. I don't ever have secret conversations in the flags about which of you we are just waiting for an excuse to ban. Because there are like 3 of you that we're just waiting.
Yeah, there's one I got on my radar right now. He's kind of pissing me off. That's all right. Hey, it's the internet. Post whatever you want. No consequences, right?
No.
Ban your...
You have freedom of speech. You can say whatever we want. We have freedom of ban.
Yeah,
I would feel bad if I banned somebody.
I haven't banned a single person yet.
I really want to, but Capsy keeps getting there first. It makes me kind of sad. Like some angels idiot will come over from Halo's heaven and be like, "Lol, your team sucks," and I want to get there. And then I clicked inspect user, and it's like banned by Capsy. Damn it! He posted 3 minutes ago. How did you do that?
He's very vigilant.
Works from home, bro.
Yeah, I got a guy asking to be unbanned because he thought Matthew was really unfair to him. And I went through his post history, and it was just, he's just a Rangers fan. He was just trolling, just coming on, just trolling the fans. And he's like, I didn't do anything. I'm like, yeah, I'm not unbanning you.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying the relative silence from Rangers and Angels fans this year, and there are no A's fans. So the AL West is, like, really peaceful this year. Because yeah, what I mean, actually... even the Rangers, like, what are they going to say? I mean, they're going to miss out on the playoffs again, and they're in win-now mode, and the Angels are just... My favorite thing ever is their season right now.
That's later down on the outline. But can we skip there? Can we make fun of the Angels for a while? Because that would make me feel better about the whole Dustin Ackley thing.
How much money does Albert Pujols have left on that deal?
7 years, $200 million.
Oh, it's so good.
So good. I can taste it when I say that sentence. I can taste the schadenfreude. Freude, sorry.
You could buy a lot of things with that kind of money. Yeah. The Angels could, like, finance my college education.
1 3/4 Josh Hamilton's. Angels. It's so great. I love it so much.
This is where productive outs would say Angels.
Angels.
If you combine Hamilton's and Pujols' contracts, you'd have what Mike Trout is worth.
Yeah. So I love... So here's the thing that... One of the things I love about the Angels is kind of tangentially related to them, and this is totally irrational and just Homer fandom, but for the longest time, whenever people talk about the best pitchers in baseball, it would be Felix and Weaver and Verlander, and I would always point out, you know, well, but Felix is so much younger than them. His stuff, he has like a more complete arsenal of pitches, yada, 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 and you just can't really win that argument because Weaver and Verlander are pitching in the playoffs and every October, and Felix is running away for the Mariners. And now we have Felix, who at 27 is having his best year right now, and whether that contract works out or not, it looks really good at this moment. And we have Weaver, who's throwing like he envies Jason Vargas's fastball velocity at this point. And Verlander's running almost a 4 ERA and having the worst season since, like, his rookie year. And it just feels really good that, like, there doesn't seem to be a lot of disagreement at this point. That if you want, you know, it's pretty much Felix and, what, David Price at this point?
Kershaw.
I think in
the American Kershaw's League. The new consensus guy that's better than Felix.
I meant the American League.
I mean, I'm not gonna say that I called the Verlander thing, but I did write an article about how Verlander's success was tied so significantly to his fastball velocity, and if it ever went down, he'd be in trouble. Mm-hmm. And it's dropped a mile and a half this year, and it is not the same.
Well, you see it with Lincecum, too. I think I was thinking about this earlier today. Basically, every great pitcher has to learn how to be a great pitcher twice. They learn how to be a great pitcher while they have their stuff, and then they got to learn again when they lose it.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about Felix is we're done with that. We released the first one. There could be more. But we've got through that first rise, and he's just fine. And
Yeah,
Scott.
Such a relief.
He added that nuclear changeup, man, like 2 or 3 years ago. He did not have that thing when he first came up. And his velocity started to drop, and he said, oh, I'll just come up with like the second best pitch in baseball and throw that.
Yeah, I like how every offseason Felix is like, oh, yeah, I learned a new pitch, and then he debuts it, and he gets insane run values on it, like that cutter thing that Pitch Effect started noticing last year.
Yeah.
He's like, by the way, I learned Mariano Rivera's cutter over the offseason. No big deal.
One of my favorite discussions about Felix, and people, I should write a post about, or one of us should, one of you that's good with statistics, Logan, should write a post about... going back and looking at all of the like phenom pitchers of the last 2 or 3 years and comparing when they were at the height of their powers and everybody was projecting Surefire Hall of Fame, how much at that age Felix had already accomplished in the major leagues. Because the one that I think of now is Matt Harvey, who rightfully is being lauded for having an amazing season. Yeah, and Harvey, I think, is 24.
Yeah.
And at that point, Felix was in his fifth full season in the major leagues.
Yeah.
And I think he won the Cy Young at 24. That would have been 2009. Math, whatever. The point is, Felix, he's 27 years old. He's the same age as Mike Karp. He's younger than so many players we think of as young and up and coming. It just boggles the mind how young he still is. And Patrick's right. He's like a fully formed, barring injury, he's going to be this for the next 3 to 5 years. Like, it's he'll lose a little more velocity, but there's no reason to think he's not going to be this amazing for, I mean, as sure as you can be with any pitcher. Yep. I love Felix so much.
Yeah, great. Felix Hernandez, 27. Justin Smoke, 26.
Shit.
Speaking of stubborn, no, the other word. I don't know if Justin Smoke saw that right. But that could be Southern. That could be Southern accent bias.
You never know with the Southern boys.
This has been mentioned on USS Mariner podcast before. But did you know that Kyle Seager's middle name is Durr?
Yes.
Sorry.
Kyle Seager's middle name is Durr.
Yeah, it's like D-U-E-R-R, I think.
It's Kyle Durr Seager.
Like an elongated Durr in the middle. Durr.
Okay.
The more you know.
Yeah.
All right, so going back to where we were on the list, the next one is the moose getting punched in the face.
Where's shit? String him up.
So
I miss this. I don't know what this is.
So apparently, all right. So a Boeing employee. Earlier this week, it was Tuesday, I think. I don't know. Last week, Tuesday. Somebody went up to the moose and punched him in the face, and the moose fell over, as one would expect. And the moose person is unharmed. I don't think the man's fate has been decided yet. What's interesting to me is that pretty much the universal response to the story has been just three words, usually, or less. Or just, you know, screw that bastard. That's pretty much it. Nobody actually has any analysis. Can you have analysis? I don't know. About punching.
Well, I would hypothesize, unless this is an elaborate plot by Coco Crisp to enact vengeance... The only analysis that I could supply, because famously the moose almost destroyed Coco Crisp on an ATV.
Do we like the moose? First of all, let's establish that point. Are we moose fans?
No, not particularly.
But it's what he represents. You don't. That's striking all of us.
No, I don't feel that I'm represented by the moose.
The Tacoma reindeer is the way to go. We went to a Tacoma game once, my family, and my little brother walks up and he's like, "Oh, it's the moose," and the reindeer got mad at him, like made these exaggerated, like angry, you know. And ever since then, I've loved the reindeer and hated the moose because the reindeer has so much more personality.
So Patrick, you don't feel that the moose is a totem for Mariner fandom when he goes out in public?
As a resident old person, I predate the moose. Although I don't remember what was pre moose. I don't know.
Wasn't it the actual USS Mariner?
Crippling depression.
The San Diego Chicken showed up sometimes. I know that. There was a boat. But we've all watched. Remember that Simpsons episode where somebody comes up to the Itchy and Scratchy mascots in Itchy and Scratchy Land and kicks them in the groin, right? And that is hilarious. And so, I'm not saying I would hit the moose in the face. I probably would not. I mean, I've certainly had opportunities in the past, and I have not done so.
You'd step on its tail.
I'm not an employee of Boeing, and did not go to the game last week. But at a certain level, there's got to be some sort of... I mean, the guy didn't get hurt. Doesn't it seem kind of objectively funny in a way?
Well, two things. One, I'm legitimately concerned that Simpsons episode you reference may have been aired before I was born.
No, yeah, it definitely was.
Yeah, we're on episode 24 of The Simpsons, right?
Were you born in 95, Logan? Season
24? Yes, I was born in 95. But
what else happened in 95?
When good in 95?
God. Anything else?
I just wonder, who looks at the Mariner Moose and says to themselves, you know what this needs? My fist.
Well... Okay, here's the thing. This is plumbing my own psyche. As I'm thinking, I'm doing the thought exercise of Patrick's hypothesizing. I think it's morally wrong to punch the moose in the face. And when I read the story, I get upset when I think about that. However, if somebody showed me the video of that Boeing guy punching the moose in the face, I would probably laugh my ass off.
All right, so we condemn the person. I just don't know. I
we all cheer the guy that runs on the field, but we all
on field streakers. Like when that guy in Houston ran onto the field and then got away, that was amazing.
I would hate that guy in real life. Like, what an asshole. But that was amazing.
Yeah.
I don't
All I'm saying
the
is,
action, but I'm impressed.
There's merit to the crime, but he also needs justice, I guess.
And I guess I'm not saying that he's not right to be condemned. I guess I'm just surprised in such a fractious media that the universal condemnation of this man, that no pundit has stepped in to take the attention of defending him. You'd think somebody, cynically, I would think somebody would have done it by now.
It's all you, man.
Yeah, there we go.
That's all you.
We had a platform to express these kind of opinions through writing.
Yeah, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Let's all tell Patrick to write something for once.
I'm not courageous enough to fly.
Patrick, defend the Moose.
Yeah, this is great. You guys are coming up with all your own post ideas. Oh, I don't have to do anything for the rest of the week.
Why the Moose Deserves Respect by Jeff Baker.
Counterpoint.
Counterpoint.
By the Moose.
The Moose should be lit on fire. Counterpoint.
All right.
Next song.
Biogenesis. Gross.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's been an hour and a half. We don't need to talk about that anymore, right? I think it's going to be interesting when A-Rod retires as a Mariner, though. It's going to be weird.
For it.
We let the dogs out.
The one-game contract.
Do you think after this, I was thinking about this the other day, after this, do you think, one, there's any chance that A-Rod ever gets in the Hall of Fame?
No.
He should.
I think he should, too. But even as the culture of voters changes, and because I think that, you know, there's a regime that's going to kind of fade out, and the new batch of voters is going to be willing to overlook some of the PED stuff because of the generation that the players were in, and so many people were associated, and who got caught and who didn't. It clouds the whole era, so just let them all in or don't let any of them in. Is there a point, if he ever goes in, that you have to seriously question which hat he wears in Cooperstown?
He'd go in as a Yankee.
Yeah, probably. I really don't believe that the Hall of Fame will still be around in its current form by then.
I agree.
I think that the next couple of years are going to be so ugly that somebody's going to start it from scratch, and they're going to do it a better job than where it is now. And really? I think that the way we talk about the voting and the way we talk about who gets in and who doesn't, it will be pointless by the time A-Rod's even eligible.
So like the Baseball Hall of Fame itself, you're thinking maybe like emancipating itself from the BBWAA and opening the voting up to a different pool of voters? Because they would like to get people actually elected to show up?
Or potentially a different group of voters basically attacking the BBWAA by themselves, and the Hall of Fame having to decide which group they want to throw their weight against with.
Oh,
I don't know if it's going to be the Hall doing it first, or another subgroup of writers or another contingent somewhere, but I just don't think it's tenable the way it is right now.
I agree, and I think there's been some really good articles written. I think Jim Capel had an article about just how disastrous this summer is for Cooperstown, the town, since there's nobody being inducted, so nobody shows up or spends any money, and you have all these seasonal businesses that aren't getting it. I mean, that's not, God knows there's enough good baseball players to elect a living person to the Hall of Fame every year at this point. So the whole, it's just a farce. It's ridiculous.
Well, my thing with PEDs, and maybe this is a terrible analogy and you can all yell at me.
Logan!
I gotta get it out in advance. Well,
don't worry, I'll tell you, whatever you say, you have to support it in an article, so go ahead.
Okay. We let in, The BBWAA lets in players into the Hall of Fame from the segregated era of baseball, which, is an era when the level of competition in Major League Baseball was reduced, and these guys got an advantage because, they were actually better than that other pool of players, but because there was a whole pool of players that was excluded. And so,
they did it openly.
Yeah, and so what's the difference? What's the difference between that and this? Like, they were lowering the level of competition before to make themselves look better, and those guys got in, and now they're, they're raising themselves up instead of blocking other people out of the game to make themselves look better, and we're like, no, not allowed. Like,
the difference is the writers didn't get lied to, and they don't feel betrayed.
Bingo.
It's not an argument of logic. The whole thing is based on emotion.
You can't win
an emotional argument. What's that?
Logic is my thing.
Yeah, but there's no logic to it's personal opinions is completely subjective.
And there's no unified one either. There's a million different voting.
I mean, a voter could not vote for Edgar Martinez because he wouldn't sign an autograph for his kid one time in 1997. These are legitimate reasons that people don't vote.
Wait, was that actually a legitimate reason?
No, I'm saying...
Did someone say that? Because I could believe that, actually.
You could not vote for Edgar Martinez to get page views, though.
Yeah. Sure. Jeff Baker fan. Or what is... Oh, Jeff Baker, Edgar Martinez fan.
Yeah. Worst Twitter bio ever. God.
Yeah, I'm going to bite my I'm going to bite my tongue right now.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I don't... Yeah, look, it's not... It's... I don't know, man. It's never... I think Patrick's right. It's going to end up in mass bloody revolution at some point in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, it does. This qualifying offer thing is going to be a disaster, too. The CBA? Good Lord. This is going to go to hell.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to
really
get...
Really rapidly. Which is why, you know, I kind of liked the Morales idea, which was... And I guess it kind of applies to PV, too. Which was acquire a player in the offseason when he has 1 year left on his payroll and make him like an average player and then, you know, pay him for the end of the year and then give him his qualifying offer and he can't get away and hooray, you've got an average player that you forced to sign with you, basically.
It's kind of the baseball franchise player, right?
Yeah, very much so. Very similar to Zag.
Which is really unfair to the players and that's why it's going to go away, but the teams might as well exploit it now. Yeah.
Just have to find an organization that's willing to piss off players enough to do it.
Marlins.
Didn't Jeffrey Loria defended Tino Martinez? Do you remember when that went down? It was like yesterday, I think. Martinez, like it was rumored that he had been physically and verbally abusive of the players, and he was going to step down. And then Jeffrey Loria stepped in and said, "No, you don't quit, even though you've been verbally and physically abusing players." And then Martinez quit anyways, but it's just so great that Loria would keep the hitting coach who has been literally abusive.
Yeah, that sounds like a really confusing
Well, he's been doing such a good job otherwise. By
yeah, that team can hit, I mean, honestly.
Hey, Giancarlo Stanton having the best offensive season of his career.
They
traded Walker and Franklin for him.
Are you picking up trade ideas off of the comments now?
Oh, Walker and Franklin for Stanton would not be... I mean, that'd be stupid, but that's not comments-level stupid. That's not like Morrison Perez for Bundy-level stupid.
Mm. That actually sounds like a really great trade, actually, for the Mariners.
Yeah, that would work out spectacularly. I think we should do that one. No. I don't know why anyone would argue against it, to be honest with you.
Seriously.
Morrison Perez for Bundy? I'm in. Yeah.
And
that's why... I think we should write a trade deadline plan this offseason that's like, instead of a list of moves that the Mariners should make that are fair, do one that's like, all right, first they should check the price on this guy, and then they should check the price on this guy, and then they should check the price on this guy, and then they should get whichever of these guys is the cheapest relative to their value.
We should just search the comments for the worst trade ideas and do like a worst of the comments
offseason. That's sort of thing. Lookout Landing's off-season plan. And just attribute every move.
As posited by the dumbest of our readership.
Yeah. Don't say that.
Sign Jacoby Ellsbury to a 3-year, $18 million deal.
Which is still less than we should sign Oliver Perez for, by the way.
Yeah, wait, someone say? Like, I saw that in the comments today. Yes. Like 4 years, $5 million a year for Oliver Perez. Like,
I did see a poster who shall remain nameless at suggest 3 years, $24 million for Perez, which would have made him a top five all-time salaried reliever,
including closers.
Yes, including closers.
Be the next Iwakuma. Yeah.
So we're just going to give him the first half of next year off and then just slowly...
Yeah, and do it to Furbush too. You know, just let's... And Caps and Wilhelmsen, they all have starting experience. Let's just make them all starters.
As long as we give him the first half of the year off, yeah, we can provide no rational explanation for it.
We could switch to the 8-man rotation.
Dude.
Your starters.
We could...
I would love it so much.
That, That should go in the crowdsourced offseason plan. Like we could do like trade Peguero and Bevin for Giancarlo Stanton and trade Oliver Perez for Dylan Bundy and then like sew Dustin Ackley's body onto Kyle Seager's head.
Wait.
I saw, what did I see yesterday? On the Seattle Times, I saw trade Aaron Harang and Carson Smith, I believe, for Brian McCann. I saw that one.
We could use him.
Yeah, it seems like a totally reasonable trade to me. I'd very much do that.
Oh.
So, is this like 20-minute segment of us doing nothing but harassing our readers going to make it into the final product?
I hope
well,
so.
The whole thing is going up as is, as has occurred. I mean, I can't. This is going to be on YouTube. Period.
YouTube. Oh, wait, the video is going up too. Oh.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So I've got some individual commenter shout-outs that I'd like to give.
Oh, great.
Particularly stupid.
This isn't on the outline. Wait. Hold on.
I'm muting Logan. Hold on. I'm muting.
This is why Logan put.
He's gone rogue.
Feel free to modify an ad. He's gone rogue.
Yeah, that's right. I put feel free to modify an ad, and then I modified and added
broken arrow.
If you're going rogue, I'm going gambit soon. I'm going to throw an ace of spades at your head.
Oh god.
I like it.
No, I'm going rogue squadron.
Well,
increasingly nerdy references.
Wow, so, I read so many rogue squadron books when I was 13.
The manual to X-Wing changed my life.
Mm-hmm. Oh god, X-Wing Dude. Books.
The Yuuzhan Vong series, when I was like 12, that was the shit.
So like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm uncomfortable with where we're going with this.
Me too.
Get back to your shout-outs.
Oh, no, I'm not actually going to do this.
Oh, okay. Good, because I thought it was kind of weird anyways.
Mm.
Yeah. So do we all? None of us have to get up and go work tomorrow or anything, right? We can just keep this going?
Yeah, I have to work at some point.
You
just said you had a job.
Crap.
Yeah, it's my own hours. I work from home.
So do I.
Oh, well, you're disciplined.
Oh, youthful ignorance.
You know what? I could use a work ethic. Like Jesus Montero.
Two errors today.
Jesus Montero. AAA today, the Reno Aces walked off on a Jesus Montero error while he was playing first base.
Yeah. Did he run a lap at least?
I'm gonna guess that they needed a double play to get out of the inning and he caught the tail end of the double play with a foot off the bag. That sounds like something he would do.
I'm gonna guess that he was playing off the bag and there was a hard ground ball to the pitcher and he was not fast enough to get to the bag before the ball did.
I believe
Jesus Montero seems so adorable. I feel so bad for him that he's so unathletic and slow as shit and useless. Seems like a nice guy. Just sucks that he's not.
Does he?
I'm not sure. I like Jesus Montero.
He seems like a.
You guys treat baseball players like they're real people.
I don't know that
sometimes.
No, I have imaginary baseball players.
They're
in my
three-dimensional.
You know that Tales from Tacoma thing that I wrote? That's what I really think about these people.
I like projecting personalities onto them. It's fun.
Yeah. Blake Bevin is totally like this guy that's all cocky about having major league experience and brags to all his AAA buddies about it.
See, now it's a book, Patrick. You just make it into characters in a novel, and then it just becomes something awesome. And tragic, actually, in the Mariners' case.
It's Dungeons & Dragons. It is. It's the same thing. The difference is that in baseball, the random number generator that gives us all our stats is weighted because different players are different levels of good. And in D&D, it's a dice. But other than that, no, it's the same thing.
Yeah, what? Felix gets to throw a D20 and Bevin gets to throw a four-sided?
Yeah.
Holy shit, I am so lost.
Yeah, all right. I'm done.
Sorry, no more D&D jokes.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm tapped out. I'm going to bed.
All right.
Logan, survive your storm.
Oh, no. Yeah, I think it's going to be okay. It disintegrated into a tropical rain. It was a hurricane. They named it Flossie. I'm not sure why they did that.
Break it down tomorrow, post 7 a.m. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay.
Stay frosty.
Yeah. Why would you name, like, wouldn't you give a hurricane an intimidating name? Like, why Flossie?
I love that Logan's continuing to talk about that. Nathan's got his hands on He's just like ready to pull him out. He's like, all right, get this shit. I got kids. I got to get to sleep.
That is correct.
All right, there's the conclusion. Enjoy it. This is your staff. This is who writes for you.
Yeah, we totally planned this.
Some of them, yeah.
Some of them. Okay. Goodbye. Go Mariners baseball.
See you guys.
Strong child on the North Beach, just east of the dark sea.